From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
State Department spokesperson Morgan Ortegas held a press conference at State on Thursday, and we bring you these excerpts.
Okay, let's get going. I'd like to turn to Secretary Pompeo's recent trip to Asia, which is a very successful effort that underscored the United States' firm commitment to a free and open Indo-Pacific region. This trip allowed the Secretary to personally reinforce America's support for our allies and partners in the region, as well as our commitment to effective, meaningful multilateralism. In Bangkok, the Secretary participated in the ASEAN-US Ministerial, the ASEAN Regional Forum Ministerial, the East Asia Summit Ministerial, and the Lower Mekong Initiative, which has just celebrated the 10th anniversary. The Secretary held very positive bilateral meetings with a variety of his counterparts, including leaders from Thailand, the Philippines, China, and India. He also participated in a trilateral meeting with foreign ministers of Japan and South Korea, as well as a trilateral meeting with Australia and Japan, after which those three nations released a statement expressing serious concerns about negative developments in the South China Sea. Our diplomacy within ASEAN nations has been consistently guided by our desire for partnership, our respect for sovereignty, and a shared commitment to the rule of law, human rights, and sustainable economic growth. All points the Secretary reiterated in his speech at the Siam Society in Bangkok, which I'd encourage everyone to read. In Sydney, the Secretary underscored our ironclad commitment to Australia, an unbreakable alliance based on shared democratic values and overlapping strategic interests. Secretary Pompeo and Secretary Defense Esper led the U.S. delegation to AUSMIN, the Australian-U.S. ministerial consultations, and discussed shared priorities, our work to achieve our shared vision for a free, open, and rules-based Indo-Pacific, the denuclearization of North Korea, freedom of navigation and global shipping and airlines, the eradication of ISIS and other terrorist groups, and the campaign to counter foreign interference in our elections. And finally, in Micronesia, Secretary Pompeo was warmly welcomed and became the first Secretary of State to visit the Federated States of Micronesia, where he stressed the importance of our decades-old partnership with the freely associated states and our continued support for the security, economic development, and prosperity of the region. Secretary Pompeo announced the United States' intent to begin negotiating amendments to certain provisions of the Compacts of Free Association with the Federated States of Micronesia and the Republic of the Marshall Islands, and our intent to begin the compact review discussions with Palau. Next, I'd like to go. It has been 11 years since Russia's military invasion of Georgia, when hundreds were killed or injured and over 190,000 civilians were displaced. For many, the impact of the conflict continues. Livelihoods remain destroyed, families remain separated, freedom of movement has not been restored, and property has not been returned. Within the last 24 hours, we received reports that Russian-backed de facto authorities have started the process of borderization at a village near a South Ossetia administrative boundary line. If completed, this action would cut the village off from its irrigation system. These actions are a threat to peace and stability. As today's actions show, Russia consistently violates the Georgian people's right to security and property. Further, Russia's invasion and occupation of 20% of Georgian territory is in stark violation of the UN, of the principles of the UN Charter, the Helsinki Final Act, and the fundamental norms and principles of international law. We urge the Russian Federation to reverse its recognition of the so-called independence of Georgia's occupied Abkhazia and South Ossetia regions. We call upon the Russian Federation to implement in full the EU-mediated August 2008 ceasefire agreement, to withdraw its forces from the occupied territories of Georgia, and to affirm and to implement a commitment not to use force against Georgia. We will not stop working until Russia ends its occupation of sovereign Georgian territory. We support the right of hundreds of thousands of IDPs and refugees to return to their homes safely and with dignity. Finally, we stand with the Georgian people and welcome the day we can commemorate the end of Russia's occupation of their territory. We welcome the joint statement by the United States and Turkey yesterday on establishing a safe zone in northeast Syria. The military-to-military talks in Ankara made progress towards establishing a sustainable security mechanism that addresses the legitimate concerns of our NATO ally, Turkey, and the United States. Well, while there are additional details that need to be worked out, we are encouraged by the initial steps that came out of these talks. A U.S.-Turkey Joint Operations Center will be established in Turkey to continue planning and implementation. We look forward to continuing our work with our partners on this important matter to achieve peace and security in northeast Syria. The United States strongly condemns the vicious terror attack outside a hospital in Cairo on August 4th that killed at least 20 people and injured many more. The explosion, which occurred near a hospital, only underscores the callousness of this disgraceful act of terror. We extend our condolences to the families of the victims and wish a speedy recovery to those wounded. The United States stands with Egypt in its struggle against terrorism. This week, the United States and Poland formally launched the Warsaw Process Working Group. Each group is dedicated to tackling a challenge to peace and security in the Middle East. The working groups build on the historic ministerial hosted in Poland in February. The Warsaw Ministerial reinvigorated our efforts to address regional security concerns on built alliances with our partners. It was an opportunity for us to share our assessments of the region and together offer solutions to the ongoing global challenges. These working groups will enhance cooperation around key areas of concern in the region. That includes cybersecurity, human rights, energy security, missile proliferation, and maritime and aviation security. The groups will begin meeting this fall, hosted by our partners, the Republic of Korea, Bahrain, Romania, Poland, and also the United States. It's good that I have a Floridians here with me for this announcement. As we head into August, we want everyone to be aware that late summer means storm season, and the strongest Atlantic hurricanes hit between August and October. For Americans whose summer trips could put them in the path of a severe storm overseas, I'd like to share a few important reminders. Sign up at step.state.gov to receive safety alerts from us. Write down and carry with you contact information for the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate. Buy both evacuation insurance and travel medical insurance. Have an emergency plan in place in case you're unable to leave before a storm hits. During a storm, be sure to update your loved ones directly or over social media to let them know you're safe. For more key tips for traveling safely during this storm season, I encourage you to follow our TravelGov social media platforms on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We will share important information on disaster preparedness through the months of August and September. As always, the safety and security of Americans abroad is our highest priority here at the Department, and we want to ensure everyone travels safely this year.
If I'm going to Florida, I should sign up with STEP. You know, there are parts of Disney World that are, you know, might be foreign countries.
You're ruining my mojo, Matthew Lee. I am pleased to announce that Deputy Secretary of State John J. Sullivan will travel to Thimphu, Bhutan, and New Delhi, India, August 11th through 17th, to advance the United States partnership with two nations that are critical to preserving the rules-based order in the Indo-Pacific region. In Bhutan, Deputy Secretary Sullivan will explore expanding and deepening our ties with the government and people of Bhutan. The Deputy Secretary will be the highest-level executive branch official from the United States to visit Bhutan in over two decades. So this is quite an exciting announcement, and I know he is really looking forward to it. The Deputy will then travel to New Delhi to advance the broad and multifaceted U.S.-India strategic partnership, which is based on a shared commitment to democratic values, economic growth, and rule of law. There, the Deputy Secretary will meet Minister of External Affairs Jaishankar and address the India-U.S. Forum. And one final personnel announcement, which I'm sad to make today. I have a personnel announcement, of course, to make. Our Assistant Secretary for Western Hemisphere Affairs, my friend also, Kim Breyer, submitted her resignation on July 24th and will be leaving the department at the end of August. Kim has been with the department for over 2 years, having started in the policy planning staff in June 2017. She was later nominated in March of 2018 and confirmed by the Senate to be the second woman and first female political appointee of either party to lead the Western Hemisphere Bureau at the Department of State. As Assistant Secretary, she built one of the most diverse leadership teams of any bureau in the department. Kim is leaving us for personal reasons. As she noted during her swearing in, no matter what she may accomplish in this job or any other, her daughter Emma was the best thing she would ever do. After more than 2 years of late nights and constant travel, Kim wants to refocus her priorities at home. We thank Assistant Secretary Breyer, my friend Kim, for her service to the Department of State and to the United States government, and wish her all the best. Now, Matthew,
yes,
before
ma'am.
You begin, my mom and granny are here, so if you're,
I'll be nice.
If you're too I'll mean to me today, granny is going to get
I'm
you.
I'm not going to be mean. Boy.
You're such an easy target.
Can I start with the secretary, the Indo part of the secretary's trip, and also Deputy Secretary Sullivan's upcoming visit?
Uh-huh.
In terms of Secretary Pompeo's meeting with the Indian Foreign Minister on
while we
Friday.
Were in ASEAN?
Yeah, yeah. In Bangkok. Mm-hmm. There have been reports in the Indian media that have been denied by people here that the foreign minister gave or told Secretary Pompeo mm-hmm. what the Indian government planned to do mm-hmm. as it relates to Kashmir on the following Monday.
Then
acting Assistant mm-hmm. Secretary Wells, I guess, or Senior Bureau Official mm-hmm. Wells, she tweeted yesterday that those reports are inaccurate. She wasn't in Bangkok, was she, at that meeting?
No, but I was.
No,
I
okay.
was in the meeting.
All right. So,
yeah.
But so whatever she was read out on that meeting
mm-hmm.
was that there was no heads up given.
That's right.
Is correct.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, given that, the situation is obviously very tense with what's
yeah.
happened. So does that have anything to do with Assistant Secretary Wells' travel right now and
mm-hmm.
Deputy Secretary Sullivan's upcoming travel
oh,
and
okay.
also Ambassador Khalilzad's travel to New Delhi? And is there any concern in the administration that the situation between tensions between India and Pakistan could hamper, interrupt, or otherwise affect the Afghan peace talks?
All very good questions. I will 100% confirm this, but I'm pretty sure that these trips from all three of them have been planned for quite some time. I know I spoke to Alice earlier today, and I think both her and the Deputy Secretary's trips have been on the schedule, as have Zal. And so I think that these are all routine trips. Do I think that this will come up? I mean, I think obviously this is something that we watch incredibly closely. It's something that we've called for calm and restraint by all parties. We want to maintain peace and stability, and we, of course, support the direct dialogue between India and Pakistan on Kashmir and other issues of concern. And I'm sure that will be addressed when all three of them travel.
Right. But is there any concern that this might have some kind of an impact, negative?
On the Afghanistan?
Because both India and Pakistan are going to be critical if that peace process or peace talks are to succeed or whatever.
And Zal, Ambassador Khalilzad, certainly spends a lot of time in both places. I think this is we're at the ninth round, the seventh or the ninth round on his negotiations that he just finished in Kabul. Of course, we do have a negotiating team that has remained in Doha, and they continue to work towards a peace deal. And I think that the team feels fairly confident about the progress that we're making. Of course, it's tenuous, it's day by day, and I think that there are always a range of issues, not just India and Pakistan, that could affect the Afghanistan peace negotiations. But I think Zal is one of the best diplomats in the business, and if anyone can get to this deal, it's going to be him.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hi, Andrea.
Hi. And welcome to Granny and your
Thank you. And my poor husband, who never gets a shout out. Sorry,
he seems to.
Yeah.
About Assistant Secretary Kim Breyer.
Yes.
Can you explain why, despite complaints from Republican senators
mm-hmm.
on foreign relations, she never agreed to testify about the Guatemala Safe Country Agreement?
I need to double check with H on that. I believe that she has had a number of consultations, even though she has not formally testified on that subject. And her resignation was, of course, dated back to July 24th, and it's something that she had told some of us that was in the process. So I think that was known around the building. But I will confirm what discussions she's had, but I do believe that she has been in touch with many senators without having formally appeared before the committee.
But formal testimony is a very important part of oversight.
Sure.
There have been numerous reports, credible reports, mm-hmm. that Steve Miller and his demands regarding immigration and Guatemala in particular, but mm-hmm. other issues, had a role in her decision to spend more time with her family.
Yeah, I talked to Kim about that. She's addressed that with me directly. She said there's absolutely no truth to that. The Washington Post reported that there was an email from Stephen Miller. She's denied ever seeing this email. I know that she's consulted with other people in the White House. I'll let them speak for themselves, but I believe that they would also offer similar denials. And, you know, Kim has been here 27 months. I know I've been on two trips with her already in the 4.5 months that I've been here. It's demanding. It's really grueling, and I think unfortunately we are losing one of the best and brightest that we have, that she's moving on, but I think that she has indicated to everyone and to me personally, I've spoken to her multiple times over the past few days, that this is something that she had planned in the works for several months now. She felt like it was time for her to move on.
I mean, it's at a critical time, and
sure,
assistant secretary positions are vacant or are acting and number of key regions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, I think Kim was left hanging in the Senate for many months. I don't remember the exact number of months, but in the 2 years that she was here, she spent probably way longer waiting in the Senate for confirmation than she should have spent.
But concerns about the numbers mm-hmm. of vacancies. I know Secretary Pompeo came and mm-hmm. tried to fill a lot of these positions.
He did, he's been aggressive.
But now we've got policy planning, obviously you've got mm-hmm. assistant secretaries in key regions, actings and others. How do you fill these gaps?
I think that, well, first of all, there's 69,000, I think, amazing people that work around the world for the State Department. I've been lucky on several occasions to serve at two U.S. embassies with, I think, some of the best and brightest diplomats around the world, and it's an honor to work with them, and it's an honor to speak for them here whenever I do brief at this podium. I'm sure that the Secretary will have some personnel announcements. They'll want to find the right people to step up in either acting roles or to fill these vacancies, and it's something that I think he has been very attuned to in the little more than a year that he's been Secretary of State and filling these key positions. Hey, Leslie.
Hello, Morgan. A quick thing, this is a breaking news story that I just wanted to ask you about.
Okay.
Are you aware of the French inviting President Rouhani to the G7?
I had heard rumors about that yesterday, yep. And
is it true?
I don't think it's true. We'll need to confirm for you, but okay. as far as I'm heard, it's rumors. I don't know why he would be invited.
I mean,
we'll confirm.
Okay.
We'll confirm, but I believe those are just rumors.
Okay. Is that something that you think that the Secretary and even the President would welcome?
Well, I think that the President and the Secretary have said that they're willing on multiple occasions to negotiate, to talk to Iran without preconditions. That offer remains on the table. Whenever the Ayatollah and whenever Rouhani, the people that are actually in charge of that government, want to speak, we'll be there to listen.
And then I just have a follow-up on something
sure.
else that I wanted to talk to you about. There was a letter today from Nita Lowey regarding the money that there's a temporary freeze on some key foreign aid funds.
Is this the OMB?
That's correct.
Yeah.
The question is, has the State Department actually provided the OMB with any details or response to the letter?
That process is ongoing. I don't know that our response is finalized. In speaking with the department, OMB's call for this data and information that you referred to is the first step in a process, of course, to determine how best to spend foreign assistance funds. And so I have not seen the letter from Nita Lowey, but again, this is the first step. And we will, of course, comply and provide the data and information that OMB requires of us.
Okay, but that hasn't happened yet.
I don't know that it's finalized. I'm sure that we're in the process. We can certainly confirm when that is finalized. But again, this is just the first step in the process. Hi. Nice to see you.
Good to see you. The Chinese Foreign Ministry's office in Hong Kong has issued a formal protest over a reported meeting between U.S. consular officials in the city and opposition figures.
Mm-hmm.
The statement demanded the U.S. explain the purpose of the meeting and, quote, immediately cease interfering in Hong Kong's affairs. Do you have anything on that meeting and in reaction to the
How did you
statement?
Characterize the first sentence? Can you say that again?
It was the Chinese Foreign Ministry
uh-huh.
office in Hong Kong.
But what did you say that they issued read your first statement again.
A formal protest?
Yeah. I don't think that leaking an American diplomat's private information, pictures, names of their children, I don't think that that's a formal protest. That is what a thuggish regime would do. That's not how a responsible nation would behave. Releasing any of that personal information of an American diplomat is completely unacceptable. That's not a protest. That's what a thuggish regime does, and it's unacceptable.
Thank you.
Well, let's address the reason for the thuggishness, which is a meeting between a consular official.
Sure, I understand the question. This is what American diplomats do every single day around the world. American diplomats meet with formal government officials. We meet with opposition protesters, not just in Hong Kong or China. I mean, this literally happens in every single country in which an American embassy is present. So our diplomat was doing her job, and we commend her for her work.
So you don't buy the Chinese argument that because Hong Kong is part of China, even though it's run differently, that this is interference in their internal affairs.
This is what not only American diplomats do. This is what other countries do.
The Secretary met with opposition people in Australia, did he not?
In Australia?
Or in Thailand, or on his recent trip?
I was in almost every meeting, and I don't recall that happening. Okay. I can double check to make sure I didn't miss something, but I was not in a meeting with opposition figures.
And the last thing,
yeah.
Are you saying there was no formal protest at all? There was just this leaking of photographs and information?
I don't know if there was a formal protest. My point is that I'm taking issue with the Chinese saying they issued a formal protest when in fact they harassed an American diplomat.
So are you saying just to put a finer point on it, that the Chinese government behaved thuggishly, or are you calling
I think I said that three times.
Hi. On the agreement with Turkey that you mentioned at the top.
Yes, ma'am.
An embassy statement said there will be a peace corridor and displaced Syrians will go there. You didn't mention that, and neither did the Pentagon in its statement. So the question, will displaced Syrians be brought into the area, and if so, will you ensure that there's no major demographic shift and no creation of a demographic corridor that separates the Kurds in Syria from the Kurds in Turkey?
So the first part, I checked with I had a member of my team, I should say, check with the Pentagon, because I know that they gave you an answer to one of your questions, and I believe that the DOD maybe just left off a sentence and didn't give you the full response. So, I mean, I think that we have the full statement that's posted on the Embassy Ankara website. I believe the DOD also has it posted as well, and we can certainly, our team can make sure that you have a copy of the full statement. And what else was it that you needed from me? I'm sorry.
Will there be the movement of Syrian refugees in Turkey into that area, and will you ensure that doesn't result in a big demographic shift?
So it's the U.S. position that we do not support any sort of forced or coerced relocations of refugees or IDPs. If and when conditions allow, any refugee who wants to return to their destination, it must be of their own choosing. It must be voluntary, safe, and dignified.
Will these be Syrians who lived in that area, or any Syrian can go there? Because 3.6 million Syrians
absolutely
would change the demography of that area.
It certainly would, and I think that any sort of discussions in fine detail on the safe zone are still ongoing. I think that we were certainly encouraged that the U.S. and Turkey issued a joint statement on something that the United States government has been working very diligently with our NATO ally, Turkey, on. And I don't think I have any details beyond that. Okay. Hey.
Morgan, do you have a status update on the CATSA sanctions for Turkey's purchase of the S-400?
No.
And can you say whether the recent Taliban claimed violence has had any role in the ongoing discussions in Doha between the U.S. and the Taliban?
Yeah, you're referring to the attack yesterday, I assume. Yeah, I mean, listen, the attack yesterday or any of these attacks are appalling. I mean, they're totally disgusting. And on every level, we think that the cost of war, especially in Afghanistan, is too high and the violence needs to end. And that is principally why Ambassador Khalilzad has spent so much time trying to get to a peace deal, because we want to get to peace. We want the Afghan people to be able to choose their own destiny, to be able to choose their own government, and we want the war to end.
But can you say whether they've warned the negotiators in Doha that this is unacceptable, whether there'd be any consequences for this?
Did the negotiators warn the Taliban? Is that the question?
Yeah, or just has there been any message from the U.S. directly to the Taliban to that effect?
I don't want to put any words in Zal's mouth, so I'd certainly need to speak to him. But I can tell you that anybody who's representing the U.S. government is certainly going to condemn both publicly and privately attacks on innocent civilians.
And just one final question. Can you confirm that Matthew Gebert has been placed on leave? The accused official involved with White Stars?
I am not able to confirm anything from this podium.
With a quick follow on
the Afghanistan?
Kabul attack, Afghanistan. The secretary, 10 days or so ago, in the interview with David Rubenstein, said that the president had directed him to prepare for the withdrawal of U.S. troops by the end of his first term. And I think he said in a follow-up answer at that breakfast.
Well, I think the way, if I may interject, way David asked the question was, would it be by the end of 2020?
And I think what the secretary said was that those were the president's orders to me, and he said that he thought it would be job-enhancing to complete, to meet that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the president has made that clear since he began campaigning in 2015.
I'm just wondering whether this Kabul attack...
It always complicates. Yeah, sure. I mean, it's definitely, it's complicating. And it certainly makes our job tougher. But, you know, at the same time, this is why we have Ambassador Khalilzad and some of the best people in the business trying to bring all sides to the table. And, you know, it's not just a... I think we spend a lot of time focusing on the negotiations that we have with the Taliban, but we're also equally incredibly focused on inter-Afghan dialogue. I was with the secretary in Kabul not long ago when we were meeting with leaders of their parliament. We met with women, we met with people in education and activists, and he had the same message, you know, which was, of course, we want all people and all parties to be brought to the table. And I think many of you know that my personal history with Afghanistan and my own personal commitment to seeing peace there. And we've talked from this podium, I think the last time I was here, about the number of people, even on my team, who have spouses serving in Afghanistan right now. And so this is something that's, I think, incredibly personal to all of us. It's incredibly personal to the American people. We're 18, 19 years in. We have young men and women who were born after 9/11 who are being sent over there to fight. And I think if the last 20 years has taught us anything, it's that the president is correct that we need to try to pursue peace in Afghanistan, and that's the goal that we're working towards.
I didn't realize you had personal experience in Afghanistan, but anyway, could you just explain why it was that you weren't able to answer the question about the person being put on suspension or leave, just the explanation as to why? You said, I'm not able to confirm anything from this podium. Why is that?
We just are not able to confirm suspensions from this podium.
Connor? Ask you about climate change in light of another UN report. When the secretary was in Micronesia, he said that one of the things that he tries to do, or we all can do, is help nations lower their carbon emissions. Is that something that you've seen him bring up in meetings with counterparts? He was with China last week. Did he urge the Chinese foreign minister to lower their emissions?
We covered a number of issues in China. I believe we sent a readout on the meeting,
I don't think
that we had that mentioned specifically there. But I've definitely been in meetings with him where we've discussed this, and I think that he said to many of you who have asked him the question, he's quoted the emissions, the United States emissions drop at 13% from 2005 to 2019, and this of course was at a time when our economy was growing by 19%. And I think the one thing that the secretary has always stressed, especially coming from the private sector, that he thinks one of the reasons why the United States has able to make such significant gains in reducing emissions is because of private sector-led innovation. And that's certainly something that he champions and talks about.
On that statistic, though, the Energy Information Administration, part of the U.S. government, reported that in 2018, emissions actually rose 2.7%. So is there any sort of concern that the U.S. is actually heading in the wrong direction now in terms of carbon dioxide emissions?
Well, I mean, if you look at the EIA forecast, they say that CO2 emissions will decline by 2.3% in 2019. And so that's certainly a target that we hope to hit.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.